Welcome to the A News Podcast. This is episode 63 for May 11th, 2018. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, go to the nonsectarian anarchistnews.org. Editorial by Not Null. Any tool is a weapon if you use it right. There is deep contempt for science in broad swaths of anarchist literature and dialogue. From a characterization of the Enlightenment as a slaughterous, technocratic march toward industrialization and doom, to narratives that rationalism and positivism are oppressive and soulless frameworks of thought, to claims that science is like any other ideology, equivalent to Christianity, for example, a framework for making claims about how things in this world should be done that more often than not results in atrocities. I find it useless to talk about what science is, or whether there is a true science that only looks good on paper, or whether there are true scientists who are faithful practitioners to the craft. There are liars and false prophets and just plain idiots in every ideology. Instead, I will only talk about what I mean when I talk about science. I'll start with my favorite quote about science. What we currently call science isn't the best method for uncovering nature's secrets, it's just the first set of methods we've collected that wasn't totally useless, like personal anecdote and authority generally are. The quote comes from a blog called Less Wrong, and it asserts that most science is still done poorly and elaborates several critical flaws of science in practice in today's world. It provides examples and offers proposals for how to reduce the impact of those flaws so that science might approach the goal of being less wrong. Without getting too pedantic, to me, science requires two things: clearly articulated, logically coherent theories, and measurements of things in the real world that test those theories in ways that provide feedback on how useful they are. There's a lot of unpacking that could happen here. In fact, I would go further and say that by measurements that test, I mean experiments. But for now, I want to limit the definition to two critical things: coherent theories and real-world measurements that test those theories. I'll use the example of universal basic income to illustrate. How should we approach this question? Is it wrong to give people money they didn't earn? Won't people who receive free money just stop working and waste all of their money on drugs, alcohol, and gambling? Isn't it wrong to give people money at all, since money is bad? Or is giving people money actually a fair redistribution of the wealth that was created by the labor of workers and therefore stolen in the first place? We can talk about these possibilities forever in our online forums, in our blog posts and comments sections, in our essays and dissertations and journals. All of the reasons why it could be good or bad, why it might be right or wrong, whether people might benefit or languish. But there is a group who is doing these experiments right now in poor rural villages in Africa. And so far, all of the evidence suggests that providing people with unconditional income increases well-being and autonomy and reduces spending on vices such as alcohol and cigarettes. It's reminiscent of a past in which police officers visited our classrooms preaching that marijuana would bring ruin upon our communities, and yet everywhere it has been legalized, people are reaping several benefits. To me, an observation is worth 1,000 online arguments. I was once talking with a friend, an earnest rationalist, who was frustrated by how anti-scientific people can be. Quote, "I just wish people had a little more faith in science," he said, slowing slightly at the end and breaking into a sheepish smile as he realized what he had just said. I smiled back. "No, you don't. Science doesn't need your faith. It doesn't care how devout you are, how righteously you follow its tenets. In fact, science flourishes when it is challenged and critiqued, when its flaws and failures are magnified and inspected and made transparent for all the world to see and improve on. As a scientist, I cringe when people say the words proven and talk about facts, as if those aren't just more philosophical constructs that need to be challenged and overthrown when they're no longer useful." None of this is to say that science hasn't resulted in atrocities, because it certainly has. So is Christianity. So is technology. So is society. But all of these things have something in common, and I think we all know what that is. That, by the way, it was people, which I had to ask Not Null what she was talking about. What's new this week? Seattle May Day Reverie, one lone anarchist's account and analysis. From PugetSoundAnarchist.org. This reflection on how to do May Day and other actions starts out strong with musings on tactics and strategy, and ends weak with information about white supremacist groups, which, like cops, are only the most obvious and easily targeted of the street active forces against us. There were some kind of odd, if perhaps minor, errors in analysis. The cops don't toe lines except when they choose to, for example. But the author is frequently humble, which, when combined with actual reasoning and opinions, is refreshing. Friendly tip. It's proposing, P-R-O-P-O-S-I-N-G, not purposing. Quote, what I can say is that the element of surprise cannot be emphasized enough. We can go to spaces where the cops aren't, get shit done, and then leave before or when the cops come. We can choose to not do what is expected of us. We can lull the cops into a false sense of security or make them drastically overcompensate, wasting their money and making them look foolish. We can play act within the known limits when it pleases us, and when their whole narrative and repression operation rests on us going out to them, and we can also ethically transgress any limits, including those the police and macho assholes have to toe to be respected.
Nighttime march in Olympia celebrates May Day a day late from Anonymous. A shortish report back on what sounds like a gentrification-focused May Day march with some anti-cop slogans thrown in for leavening. Quote, when the march reached 123 4th Avenue, a new and loathsome condo that markets to yuppies, it was tagged with messages of fuck you and fuck this. One of the windows at the condo was broken out and the march continued up 4th, writing more graffiti. When the group passed U.S. Bank, many more windows were smashed out. Soon after, at 4th and Franklin, when people passed the vacant unit they used to house the downtown ambassador's so-called welcome center, the giant window there was broken with exuberance. The covered doorway to the welcome center used to be a place where houseless people could sleep at night, but recently the owners of the building put up a floor-to-ceiling chain-link fence so that no one can sleep in the doorway. This is obviously a cruel example of the callous, oppressive bullshit that those who own property downtown inflict on those whose existence they deem inconvenient, unquote. The report back includes a text of a flyer handed out to bystanders.
The April 19th uprising in Nicaragua from Crime Think. This is an interview with a Nicaraguan anarchist about resistance to Ortega's recent reform efforts. This is a very detailed report on the context for the resistance, some of the pro-government groups, and what happened. It's introduced by some Crime Think analysis about some of the problems with working with other people. Quote, anarchists can identify several errors that can arise in popular uprisings. The discourse of, quote, fighting corruption, widespread from Nicaragua to Armenia, appears to offer a point of departure to build popular movements that are critical of the government. Yet, in fact, by implying that government could function properly if not for the corruption of specific politicians, this discourse legitimizes government itself, distracting from the systemic problems created by capitalism and setting the stage for new politicians to replace the old ones in an endless cycle. That explains why this rhetoric has been so useful to demagogues like Donald Trump, who charge their enemies with corruption in order to take power and do the same things themselves. Unquote.
Calling campaign to hashtag DropJ20, May 10th to 11th, from defendj20resistance.org. This announces a campaign to call court officials to drop the charges against the remaining 59 people who are still up for arrests from J20.
Cuba, anarchists open ABRA, Social Center and Anarchist Library, in La Habana, from Anarchist Radio Berlin. Quote, a space to promote experiences and practice independent of any foreign or national government or the institutions which represent them, and focused on the capabilities of those involved. From ABRA, we will insist on a practice which prefigures the kind of sociability that we dream of, and in friendly relationships with the environment, which results in minimal consumption and a maximum of non-polluting solutions of our own. This new effort is essentially anti-capitalist, given that capitalism promotes utilitarian relationships among people, supremacy, competition, profit, all of which are not conducive toward the type of sociability we aspire to achieve. These forms of relationship that capitalism promotes are sustained by states, businesses, and corporations that dominate and pillage the world and our country. For this reason, the social center stands diametrically opposed to capitalism, unquote. The comments on ANews for this post were weird. One person saying that the center was a U.S. operation to destabilize communism. In these days of heating up conflict between Russia et al., I'm not sure how funny that is.
Yogyakarta, Indonesia. Anti-anarchist repression after march against feudalism. May Day. From Concha.info. More information at agitasi.noblogs.org. A response, including videos, to people being angry about an anarchist event aimed at those angry people. Quote, the destruction of one police post and the call to murder the Sultan have massively angered the people of Yogyakarta. The anger is absent when the police repeatedly, with violence, are at the front line of conflicts between people's interests and the rulers, on the side of the rulers, of course, like the one in Taman Kulinprago, where there is an ongoing process of land grabbing by the Sultan through the legitimation of a feudal land ownership system, on behalf of the expansion of the tourism industry. Anger is also absent when the inhabitants of the urban kampungs, informal settlements, slums, have to deal with water shortages caused by the usage of groundwater by hotels and apartments, the construction of which is intensifying with the blessing of the Sultan, of course. Unquote. This is reminiscent of the event and pushback in Montreal about a month ago. Meanwhile, quote, "We are libertarians. We are what you call anarchists. We dream of a world where people cooperate with each other, work together, rule over themselves in a horizontal way, without rulers, royals, political contract, social contract, or capitalists. We want a life in its truest form, where humans' natural desires are in tune with nature, a life without class, racial, ethnic, religious, and other false divides." Unquote.
On the struggle against Basler Gut prison from freedomnews.org.uk. A reprint from Avalanche about direct action against a prison in Switzerland. While it references insurrectionary ideas, it acknowledges that because there is no local or mainstream resistance to this prison in particular, or prisons in Switzerland in general, the actions against this prison can't be said to be insurrectionary. That is, they don't involve anarchist DIY intervention in an existing trajectory. In the US, that doesn't really stop anyone from calling themselves insurrectionary, but in Europe, the original meaning still has some influence. Quote, "If anarchy cannot be a simple opinion, no philosophy about some possible better future, and much less a program, a clearly defined goal, it can be a journey of constant discovering and shaping your diverse and chaotic self in confrontation with a hegemonic truth or authoritarian dynamics." Unquote.
How many times does a person have to be retried? Athens, Greece. From Act for Freedom Now via mpolothia.net. Answer to the headline, quote, "As many times as it takes the anti-terrorist brigade to declare them guilty," unquote. This is a disturbing move in court tactics. Quote, "In July 2017, the decision of the five members of the Court of Appeal seemed not to obey the orders of the anti-terrorist brigade and media because they acquitted him of all charges against him. On Friday, May 11th, they will consider whether the acquittal of the Court of Appeals will be final or whether the comrade will once again be dragged into another trial on the basis of the following accusations: participation and belonging to the CCF, participation and involvement in terrorist groups, attempted manslaughter, intentional homicide. May 11th will not be the end of the story. It is rather the beginning of a new, undeclared, yet very real period of hostage-taking of our comrade until the decision of the Supreme Court is finally announced, which could take from a week to several months. Although the legal proceedings of Tassos Theophilou might appear as the manifestation of personal revenge, this is not the case. This is a political accusation related to the repressive restriction of the anarchist movement, the wider combative movement and our class in its entirety," unquote. This is also a call for protest May 5th and a gathering on May 11th.
Paris, solidarity is attack, from Act for Freedom Now, via Attaque. A very brief communique about some actions for international folks and prisoner solidarity, and also calling out indie media site Indinantes, which seems to be publicizing things better left under the radar? As always, hard to tell from so far away.
Ambert, France. Two comrades arrested in the last repressive wave have been released. From Act for Freedom Now, a very brief note on the release, although they remain under surveillance, of course, of two of the many arrested recently, and some funny mistakes that were made by court officers. Take one's laughs where one can get them, is what I always say. Quote, "As for the investigation, it had gone on for months involving telephone tapping, geolocation of telephones, GPS detectors on at least two cars, and photos of meetings between people at the least," unquote.
In a rebellious month of May, reflections on militant autonomy, from autonomies.org. A piece on what it means to be militant, to fight authoritarian institutions and practices. A permanent tension in anarchist thought, of course. It brings up scale and other points of context, which I always appreciate. Quote, "I believe that we must first get past this trade union imaginary of social movement and consider ourselves in a continuous and necessarily perpetuated struggle, even if its intensity increases or decreases. We are engaged basically in an asymmetric social war against capitalism and authoritarianism, and this requires that we make a war effort to arm ourselves at the height of the conflictuality that this presupposes. And I say asymmetric because some, fed by Hollywood heroism, are always ready to play the game name of the epic charge against police adversity, even though the latter will never be but momentarily overwhelmed, and they will come back better armed and more numerous the next time. The social war that must be waged is an invisible, low-intensity guerrilla war, a discreet reinforcement of the means of resistance in networks, and a conflictuality reserved above all for the preservation, if it is necessary and brutal, of the means and places of struggle. And to this is added the necessary and regular sabotage of what makes up the power of the adversary that endeavors to reduce our spaces and possibilities of autonomy. Unquote. Does it sound French enough? Anyway, thumbs up from me.
Are you radical enough to be a relationship anarchist? From GQ. Yes, GQ, that used to be called Gentleman's Quarterly. I would paraphrase relationship anarchy as a new name for being in the moment, and I'd call it relationship zen. But of course, no one asked me. Quote, for instance, my boyfriend is my intimate partner, my bringer of orgasms, my trusted friend and the person with whom I'm planning a shared life with. But I also have a best friend who lives next door to me and occasionally even spends the night in my bed, even though we don't hook up. My other best friend is a woman I used to date and still love, but who is no longer a romantic or sexual partner. Likewise, my boyfriend has close and intimate friendships with people whom he once was sexually involved with. Despite our commitment to one another, we also give each other another room for those other intimate relationships. Are we relationship anarchists, tricking ourselves into believing we're monogamous based on imposed societal structures? The answer is no, but also sort of? In the Relationship Anarchy Manifesto, Nordgren states, don't rank and compare people in relationships. Cherish the individual and your connection to them, unquote. It can be helpful to spell things out and label different tendencies. It can also be distracting and constraining. You choose.
Media. Nightfall number 11. From nightfall.blackblogs.org, a singularly uninformative webpage. Nightfall's subtitle is An Agitational Newspaper. This is a six-page PDF out of Minneapolis of an essay called Against the Smart City, with reference to an anonymous communique sent to Conflict MN and with citations from the Invisible Committee's To Our Friends, it discusses how cities are becoming increasingly electronically friendly and electronically integrated to the detriment of outlaws and outsiders. Referring to an Invisible Committee quotation, quote, this spontaneous order occurs because the potential for disorder has been foreclosed on by the very structure of the city. Not only do these surveillance projects allow the police to track those they designate potential criminals, they psychologically impact our behavior and encounters. This is the real panopticon effect. While disorder can never be completely eliminated, the smart city is designed for its maximum attenuation. And to put our cards on the table, we greatly prefer disorder over the world as it exists. Unquote. Relearning some of the lessons of the Situationists, so that's cool.
Audio. Anarchy Radio, May 8th, 2018. An hour. Jay-Z and Kathan both like the new Backwoods publication, though Jay-Z is sad that domestication wasn't referenced at all. Other things remain bad, except for activism.
The Hotwire number 31, May 9th, 2018. 39 minutes. The last one of the season. They include a survey about things like how often you listen, whether you use the show notes, what do you like, not like, etc. Audience participation, yay! Some things are repeated from last week, including the need for calls of support for the J20 arrestees and for Sean Swain.
Free Radical Radio Books Podcast, Episode 4. The Silence of the Animals by John Gray. An hour and 13 minutes. Three friends talk about a book they enjoyed. The sound is spotty and they all agree with each other about it all, as far as I could tell. I didn't come away being interested in the author or this title, but perhaps this is just not how I get excited about books. Or maybe my book pile was particularly looming when I was listening to this and I didn't feel like feeding it. As always, your mileage may vary.
TFN number 8, calling in sick to riot. 6 minutes, a brief mention of the Haymarket history of May Day, and then riot and protest porn from around the world more or less for the next 4 minutes.
The Final Straw Radio, 8th anniversary episode, an hour and 9 minutes. A special episode for their anniversary, Burse interviews the IGD podcast host about IGD and interviews Linda Rose, main host of an anarchist podcast in Australia.
Bad News, Angry Voices from Around the World, episode 11, April 2018. Hotwire. Yay, students for gun control. No, really, we're down with the youth. We cool? 105 FM on the island of Lesbos come with news from around the North Aegean, including the persecution of migrants at Moria and in court, Dissident Island Radio in London on strike organizing against staff and lecturers at the University and College Union in the UK, plus words from Anna Campbell, a UK-born anti-fascist, animal liberationist, and anarchist organizer who was killed during the Turkish assault on Afrin in Rojava. From Athens, Radio Zones of Subversive Expression have words about the acquittal of Golden Dawn racists of hate speech, levels charges at anarchist Tasos Theofilo of terrorism by identity. A Radio Berlin shares thoughts on fake news, a website called GetBadNews.com, nothing to do with us, about media literacy, and then back to the hot wire, talking to Ashanti Alston about the continuing murders of Black people by cops.
Topic of the week. What are you listening to lately? We find inspiration in many places. For many people, creating, listening, and talking about music is an inspiration that keeps the tumultuous happenings of everyday life somewhat at bay, and is how we creatively express ourselves. Previously, an older topic of the week focused on anarchist media of all sorts, whereas with this new topic, we would like to specifically focus on audio projects and music. What are your favorite pieces of anarchist audio currently or in the past? What are the qualities that make you think of it this way? What about non-anarchist audio or music projects that are or could be considered anarchist friendly? What else are you listening to that you find inspiring and engaging that you think anarchists should be listening to? Why? Did you come to anarchism via a subculture of music or a group of friends that were interested in similar sounds? What was it like? If not, do you think that music had any impact on you becoming an anarchist? Is music your life project? What might that look like for anarchist thinkers? In the hopes of avoiding your giant playlist of YouTube classics, let's try and keep those posts down to a few of your favorites and your thoughts on what qualities you find most appealing within, or thoughtfully answering some of the other questions in this topic of the week.
Yeah, I did not come to anarchy through music at all. And I've definitely heard your stories about coming to it through punk and like a whole generation coming to it through punk. But I was pre-punk and did not, like, music was not, I mean, I hung out at a punk venue that was significant because of other things that were happening around it.
I.E. Gilman.
But I did not, music was not part of my mix at all in that way. It was not a political thing to me in that way.
Well, it's weird because I would actually say that music isn't how I came to anarchism. The music scene or the subculture was how I came to anarchism,
sure.
Which is distinct.
Sure.
You know, most of the music that I listened to, especially as a teenager, was much more in the finger-pointing, sing-along vein than it was in the independent thought. Most anarchist bands, as far as I'm concerned, are terrible.
They're like anarchist fiction. The politics overwhelms the art or whatever.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, say what you will about Crass, which was never my particular genre. But so say what you will about Crass, but you know, as a musical experience, they're terrible.
Uh-huh.
You know, they really do shriek for 5 minutes and call it a song.
Dude, you said you were a punk. What the fuck?
Right. No, I mean, and so in fact, I wasn't a punk.
Right.
I was what's called a hardcore kid. Right. And hardcore more or less means American punk rock music. And it tended to be faster at a certain time, although that's all changed. Anyways, the origin material is different. And bands like Crass and, geez, I can't even think of other, Exploited and Crucifix and you know, just all those UK peace punk bands, yeah, they were just never my taste.
Mm-hmm.
I he'd always question the premise of the question. Mm-hmm. but I think that music is anarchism.
Oh,
in the same meaning that the feeling that you have for both things are very similar. They're as subjective experiences. They're both the ways in which we can talk about the sublime in different contexts.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, there isn't, you know, again, most anarchist bands are terrible. And so what's wonderful to me about music is the same thing that's wonderful to me about anarchism. It works if it takes you somewhere else.
The ineffable.
And you're glad to be there. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't have any. I'm not sure what my into this topic of the week is exactly. I definitely am interested, as I am with fiction. I mean, I really am, and I may pay much more attention to fiction than I do to music. But there is, and this isn't also the topic of the week. Isn't also just about music. We could talk about other podcasts too. But at any rate, the question of how do anarchist themes come out in fiction that is not anarchist is definitely engaging to me.
True.
And it's easier with fiction because the art of the fiction is words, as opposed to the art of music is not words.
Necessarily.
Right, necessarily. Yeah, so there, plop.
Yeah, I guess for me the answer to that question is every text has something in it that is perhaps anarchistic. And I realize I sound like a loon or something, but
like crime thing.
I don't believe that they get to own that.
That's fair. That's totally fair. Poke, teasing you.
I mean, they wish, and sure. Perhaps they wish 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But no, I again, you know, to me, you know, good fiction has aspects of it that are like anarchism.
Yeah.
So this is, a way in which we would argue against anarchism in the way that we normally argue for anarchism, because we would like to inscribe this sort of, like, beauty in all of the things. But instead, I'd like to say that beauty does exist to some extent.
Yes.
In all of the things.
In all the things, yeah. No, that's true.
I mean, really, this week, and, you know, by and large, I'm not exactly like, you know, as I get older, it's like I sort of clamor to try to understand what people are doing and talking about and what music is relevant. Mm. And I would say I feel good if I'm about 5 years behind. But that's, you know, sort of popular culture. And like, you know, popular culture is popular because it is designed to hit the eardrums of someone who's of a certain age, which I'm absolutely not. And so I by and large, I'm not on top of the newest hip hop artists, and I'm not on top of, you know, who the top 10 hits are or whatever. But I do, you know, I don't avoid those things.
Sure.
I just don't chase after them. But this week, I mean, I'm absolutely thinking about the song that I think everyone else is thinking about, which is Childish Gambino's This Is America. And, you know, the music video. And it's funny because just today I picked up another, read through another critical essay about it that basically talked about how it was preachy. And and so it's interesting to me, you know, because, you know, of course, at the same time that I'm totally open to, like, clicking a link and checking something out, I'm also going to check out the dialogue.
And, sure, about the context.
Yeah, and you know, the Gambino song has absolutely polarized people in a shocking way, because to me, it is just a powerful.
Yeah.
In my opinion, it's a too short of a clip.
Yeah.
Like, in fact, it only does two verses before it sort of goes to a transition and then the song's over.
Mm.
And I mean, honestly, that story could be told in 5 chapters at least. And, you know, and so to me, part of the message of that song is, and just to summarize the song for people who don't have access to YouTube, it's basically like, on the one hand, it can be just called today's critique of gun violence, which is not to say it's a simple song that says don't shoot guns at people, but instead it basically talks about guns in the context in which they exist right now, which is mostly on the bodies of black people. And it's, I don't know Gambino's stuff that well, although his early stuff I checked out, and I just felt like it was silly. This is absolutely him not being silly. It's an adult show or adult track or whatever, but mature. But the whole pacing, it's this fantastically paced video using every modern choreographic technique. It's absolutely shows Gambino, or Glover as we know him, as in this amazingly talented light. Like, he's clearly, like, on his game. on every level, and the textures and the layers of the video, I mean, for me, they're jaw-dropping. There's absolutely, you know, multiple things happening in the background at the same time. There's a couple things happening in the foreground. And, you know, for a 4-minute video, it's dense.
Multi-layered, yeah. Yeah, I definitely also thought it was extremely powerful. And then I read one considered review, which you linked me to. And the review, I thought, had some points. But what struck me about the review was that two things. One is that they were really not feeling generous towards Glover, which leads you to not sort of play along with the artist. and that's a tactic of reviewers, and that's fine. And I've certainly done it myself. And on a certain level, you're looking for an edge in that way when you're writing a review because you want to have something to say. And I get that. And the other thing was that it seemed like they were really part of a conversation that I was not part of. And so they were really in best faith reading of the reviewer, they were part of this whole panoply of conversations about how to portray race and how to portray Black violence and or violence on Black people and how to deal with all of these questions, so that this was not sufficiently sophisticated for that conversation. But part of the point of a really popular thing or something that catches people's attention is that it has a broader appeal and isn't just for the people who've already been talking about this stuff. So anyway, it just made me start thinking about sort of audiences and reviewers and the relationship of reviewers to audiences. And I definitely thought I thought the video was amazing. But maybe the reviewer is not trying to talk to us, in which case, who are they trying to talk to? And yet, so anyway, that's the direction I went in.
And so to answer the topic of the week in the form of an answer to this video's questions, I felt like this video was absolutely an appropriate anarchist video because the themes that it's talking about, which is not necessarily Black violence, but is the idea of
violence against Black people as much as anything. But yeah.
Yeah, right. Violence against Black people. But what is basically like the social context and the way in which we as individuals are powerless to do much about it.
Yes, absolutely.
Except for to talk about it in essentially a symbolic
way. Yes, in a fairly shallow, and mostly fairly shallow. I mean, the whole minstrelly aspect of the video I thought was super intense and not done justice to, I think, in the reviewer, you know, in the review that I read, whatever.
I did see a BuzzFeed link that more or less was like 13 references from the video that referred to actually the minstrel heritage of the video. Mm-hmm. There's a famous minstrel image that's actually the pose that he took in the first section.
Yep.
That was very, very effective, very nice.
Yep.
But it's worth mentioning that like that kind of telling story by allusion and by remembrance and by playing with these things, that's not just
self-conscious about the role that you are playing yourself as a performer when what you're criticizing is the fact that we're all performing all this stuff. I mean, it's really layered. So yeah, on the level, if art is on some level inherently anarchistic, which is not exactly what you said, but where I'm going, then I think this video is art.
Well, and I guess more pointedly to the topic, this is the anarchist tune that I was listening to this week. And that really made me think about these subtexts and about this layering. And, you know, clearly I don't believe that Gambino or anyone associated has an anarchist intention.
Right.
And perhaps the anarchist intention ruins songs more often than it makes excellent songs, because perhaps anarchism at its best isn't an intention.
Right. Right. That is a fucking deep thing to... Okay, I have to think about that one for a while.
Well, I mean, I especially say it in the context of having chosen a conscious life of anarchism, so.
Absolutely. I think we can end there.
This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lynn O'Mabel, written by Jackie, produced and narrated by Chisel and a friend. The editorial was written by Not Null. Aragorn and Chisel did the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org to learn more Anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackheart.com. And for news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, go to anarchistnews.org. Don't catch you slipping now.